Summertime. The best time of the year for a kid, right? Long hot days spent at the pool, or at the beach, or camping, or on a road trip through a national park. Yep, as the song goes, the living is easy. It was for me, until I turned 14, and my family spent our summer on a ranch because my dad wanted to teach me the value of hard work. That's when I became painfully aware of just how long and how hot summer days could be. Waking up at 4 a.m. and working until almost 10 p.m., day after day after day. And it worked. I did learn how to work, but also grew an appreciation for the land, animals, and resources we spent those long days caring for. Hello and welcome to Young Living's podcast, The YL Drop. My name is Jacob Young, your host. Young Living is the world leader in producing and distributing premium essential oils. This podcast will provide you with drops of information about Young Living, including stories, history, products, lots of little fun facts, and even more. We're also going to give you an opportunity to get some free products. It was on the Skyrider Wilderness Ranch in Tabiona, Utah, where I spent that educational summer years ago. We're going to talk to Skylar Olson, who manages it for Young Living. His expertise and hard work over the last 7 years has helped to transform a neglected section of land with depleted resources into a successful farm and ranch that is currently thriving and will always continue to thrive. Skylar, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Doing great, Jacob. Yeah, man, I remember those days. I hear you talking about the hot, long summer days, and I'm right there. Yes. I remember it.
Doing all the yard work out in the front when there was no backyard and front yard to the lodge, moving all the rocks and long summers, very long summers.
Monumental work.
Yes. Yeah. Lots of work. Lots
Cutting
of fun
hay.
Work. Yes. The hay too. That was pretty tricky.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember being really impressed because you must have been 14 or 15.
Yep.
And you hopped out of the swather and I was like, dang, like. He's been around this stuff, you know?
Yep. Ever. Well, since I was about 7 years old, learning how to operate heavy machinery. First thing I learned how to operate was a 18-speed Peterbilt dump truck. And my dad cut a PCP pipe. PCP? PVP?
C.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got you.
Yeah. And he made stilts out of it. So I couldn't reach the pedals. So that's how I was able to reach the pedals. And then he had the clutch like somewhat already engaged because I didn't have enough strength in my leg to fully disengage and engage it. Yeah, just to get me going. And I never went past like second gear. But yeah, that's the first thing I learned. And then went to bulldozers, track hose, back hose, swathers, tractors, skidsters, front end loaders. I mean, you name it.
So, all of it.
Yep.
I remember your dad, we were working in the back. Like when I say the back, behind the lodge. On the mountain where all the elk are, and there's a road, and it needed rebuild. And he asked me to do it. He's like, grab the D8, the dozer, and push the road up and then push it down. I'm like, Gary, I don't even know how to start the dozer, like, let alone operate it.
Yeah.
He's like, well, today's a great day. And he starts it, and he's like, here you go, kid, and then like leaves. And I'm like, okay. And it took me a while. I'm going back and forth and tearing up the little patch of dirt where you're parked. And
yeah.
Like, I'll tell you what, in 2 days, I was like,
yeah,
felt like I was pretty cool.
No, and that's pretty much like we have a lot of members that come to our harvests, right, at Highland Flats. And he's like, all right, there you go. And they're like, well, I don't know it. He's like, no, you'll figure it out. Just start playing around with the buttons and stuff. You'll figure it out. And it's kind of like that's the best way to learn is under pressure in some aspects and stuff. And he would walk you through a little bit, but he's like, okay, this, that, good to go. I'll be back in a little bit. So yeah.
And then watch from a distance with a smile.
Yeah. So explain to me, Skylar, before the ranch, what all you were doing, your life before Young Living, when you met my father and I, and then I guess current.
Sure.
And future.
Yeah. Well, I grew up 10 minutes from here in Bluffdale. So born and raised in Utah. I was a firefighter before coming here. I was a wildland firefighter, and I worked for a department here in Salt Lake City. So I did that for a number of years, and then I went and would live with my uncle in Colorado. And my uncle was a rancher and an outfitter. He kind of inspired me for this whole thing because on my mom's side of the family, they had a dairy. Like my grandpa's dad had a dairy, and then he took a different path. He opened his own welding company here in Salt Lake City. He helped build the U of U hospital.
Like, oh, wow.
That was his life, you know, but they always had like small acreage.
Mm-hmm.
And then on my dad's side, Like his family came from cattle people. They're ranchers in southern Idaho. But he, again, he left. He joined the military and then came back to Salt Lake. So my family was in agriculture, but my direct family weren't like making a life out of it.
Yeah. Right?
So my uncle Darren, he wanted that. Like he left here. He moved to Colorado. He's like, I want a ranch. And he like self makes himself, you know, enough money to buy a ranch and starts the whole thing. And that like spoke to me. I'd go out and live with him and spend time with him. Like, oh yeah, this is like, this is in me too. And I don't want to do anything else. I got to figure out how I can do this all the time because I love walking outside and you see the beauty, the mountains, yeah. the grass, maybe there's a bear. Like that's my life.
You're just part of it all day, every yes. day.
So it was just inside of me, and it was certainly inspired by members of my family who participated in it.
Sweet. And so from that, how did you end up meeting? I know like it, yeah. you told me it was complete chance, but you know, nobody really knows that story.
Yeah.
So I'd like you to share like how that came to be,
sure.
all that.
Series of bad decisions is what I like to tell people. Yeah. Like really, like I had a great job and me and my wife were living in Wyoming. And we probably should have took a vacation, but we quit our jobs and like moved back to Utah. So I was just in this weird point of time where I was like available to do whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been working as an outfitter, full-time, part-time, off and on for almost 20 years. And through that, I'd met people who were outfitters here in the state of Utah and received a call like, hey, I heard you're in town. Would you be interested in guiding a group of people? But I can't tell you who it is.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, sure. You know, that sounds great. You know, I love being in the mountains. So as time comes by and it's getting closer to season and we're getting ready for it, the day before you guys showed up to the mountain where we were going to be hunting, they tell me, oh, it's Gary Young. You know, like, I'm like, I don't know who that is. And there's, well, Gary Young with Young Living. I'm like, man, I've never heard of Young Living. He's like, okay, well, that might be good. So you and your dad show up and we shake hands and it just started like a really great relationship.
Yeah. You treat us with respect and just like how you would treat anybody else. So I completely agree. And I loved that. So
yeah, well, it was awesome. And your dad, like part of the deal, like he had leased like a big amount of land from this family to take people out hunting. That was like an important thing for him to share with people. You know, the art or the just participating in the wild, getting your own food, respecting what nature can give you. Like that was an important thing I felt for him to share with people. He wanted to share it because it's kind of like dwindling or.
Yeah. And hunting kind of has a bad rep nowadays because a lot of people see it as, oh, you just go shoot a pretty animal and hang it up on your wall. There's so much more to it. Like, yes, we like to have that as part of that story, right? A memory of that story with us, but that's not why we do it. You know, for a lot of us, like my father and I, we always hunted for meat. And the saying with my dad was, you always go for meat before you go for the horns, right? Meaning the size of the horns. Like everybody always wants the biggest size horns for the bragging rights, just like fishing stories, right? The fish gets bigger and bigger each time you tell the story. And same thing with the hunting story, right? The elk gets bigger and bigger throughout each story. But for him, it was just so much more. It was always meat before the horns, meat put on the table. And elk is so rich in nutrients and vitamins. And it was just important that he teach people how, like you said, to respect not only the land, but the animals that inhabit it, who have been, you know, roaming the land even before we came along. You know, it's their home.
Yeah.
And we have to respect that.
Yeah.
And us being there is circle of life and teaching, you know, our family and our loved ones and our children, you know, like if the world flipped upside down, how to maintain for themselves, you know, how to put food on the table. So I always loved and admired that about my dad. Was to him, it was honor and integrity for the land and the animal as well.
Yes.
So.
And the knowledge, like you said, if the world gets flipped upside down, man, I think we've all kind of felt like that recently, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And to know that you can provide for yourself without any of the mechanisms around us that we rely on so heavily is a very empowering thing.
Yeah.
And I connected with that. I was just like, man, you're like my guy. Like I can totally do this because you never know who you're going to get when you're an outfitter. It's like, is he going to be able to keep up? Does he respect what we're doing?
I don't think that was ever the issue of my dad.
He was wearing me out. You know, I'm like a decently in shape guy. And your dad was, yeah, he could go up those mountains and down those mountains in cowboy boots.
Yeah,
in cowboy boots. You know, I'm like got my hiking boots on and he's slipping on his cowboy boots and we go all day. Mm-hmm. And he's wearing cowboy boots, you know.
I thought that was like one of the funniest things is every time that we'd go hunting, you know, my dad would kind of be sleeping or something like that. They'd always say, so how do we make it easier on your father? Like, they're like, no disrespect, but like your dad's an older gentleman. And I was like, oh, that won't be, you'll have troubles keeping up with him.
He could move.
I couldn't even keep up with him.
Well, he didn't want to be catered to. Like he didn't want the guide. He didn't want me there.
No.
You know, I could tell that, but it was part of the rules
of
this area, right? You had to have a guide. So it was a very interesting thing. It's like, I guess I'm here for moral support, you know, like he could do his thing.
Yep.
And it was impressive.
So with that first hunt, that's where we all met. And then from there, Skyrider started to come into play. And now you are our general manager of Skyrider. So I'd like you to share the story with everybody of how that transition happened. And a lot of people don't know like where Skyrider is in this small little town called Tabiona that nobody really has ever heard of. And so a location explanation kind of where it is and that transition. Yeah.
Well, I'm like hesitant to say it because it's like you say, you know, Tabiona and then everybody comes, but I want everyone to come.
Yeah.
So it's about 2 hours from Salt Lake City. I think it's the best kept secret.
Northeast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You go up over Park City and wind around through Strawberry and you enter this little town, Tabiona. And it's, I like to say it's the best kept secret in Utah because even people that are here, you tell them you're from Tabiona, you live in Tabiona, they're like, what? Where's that? You know, and it is a beautiful place. It's a very special place for a lot of reasons. And it's like, if you're at the lodge, like sitting on the deck, you look at the high country, like you can see aspens and pines. We're talking like 11,000 foot peaks. Mm-hmm. And you look down to the, down to the east. And it turns to red rock. So you have like all the things that Utah is known for, like big, beautiful mountains and red cliffs. And it's in one view. It's a very strange place for that, for the viewing. And it's very clean. Yeah. You know, there's no inversion there. The air is always really clean.
Oh, that's great.
The water's really clean. So anything we grow in our fields is also like really clean.
It thrives so well.
Yeah. It's good soil. It's a beautiful, beautiful spot. And you can, I like to say, and you might be able to add on to this, like if you didn't get to know you or Gary, like come to Skyrider and you kind of get to know you.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you just take that in and look at that place and feel it and you're like, oh, okay. Like you can kind of relate.
You can just get a sense of my father's personality and why he bought that area.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Like I completely agree.
It's just Gary, you know, it's just you and Gary. Like it's just... So if you didn't get a chance to know him, like come there and you kind of get a sense of who he was in a way.
So your transition from hunting guide to general manager of Skyrider, how did that all play out?
Well, we were, your dad offered me a job at the end of the season. So we spent like 50 days together or something on the mountain. And I had no intention of staying. I was headed back to Wyoming. Like I've had enough of you. Like I'm going back. So he's like, you know, you need to come see my ranch. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. And finally we drove up there and it just like in awe. I'm like, man, like
You got to share the story though of how you accidentally went past and went into Duchesne. And you're like, I'm not staying here. Yeah. I'm not moving.
Well, you got like Hannah, Tabiona, beautiful place. Yeah. And then you go past that and you start to get into real deserty, like bleak looking stuff. And I'm like, how do you get enough water to grow anything out here? Right. And I call him. He's like, oh man, you passed us by like
an hour,
20 miles. You got to turn around. So we turn around and we find it and you drive, you know, you turn off the 2-lane road and you cross that bridge.
Go across the bridge.
It's like, as soon as you hit the bridge, like you look left and right and it's just like, whoa.
It's almost like a hidden paradise.
It's a hidden paradise.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you drive and you come up the little hill and then you see the fields and the lodge and it opens up into this just special place. It's home, man.
Yeah,
it's home to me.
So you talked about working. You weren't too sure. You obviously accepted.
Yeah.
So what was that turning point for you? Why did you accept?
Once I, you know, I liked you and your dad a lot, and I felt a connection there. And I wanted to like keep that. You know, I didn't want to like say goodbye. Mm-hmm. I felt like I needed to be there. And then you get to what was going on up there. I'm like, man, I've never been a part of something this big.
So different too.
So different and big. And but I don't mean big, like it's big geographically. It's 17,000 acres, right?
Yeah.
Which for a kid like me, that's a dream come true.
Mm-hmm.
Like, man, like I get to like walk in that field. Or I want to go, we have 7 miles of the Duchesne River. I can like go fish that. Like,
and we got Jackie's Landing.
Jackie's Landing. Hi, Jackie. We love you. And it's, it felt right. And it felt big. And it felt like an opportunity that I would never have again. So, yeah, I end up working for your dad. And I say that, like, I work for Young Living. But I worked for him in a way. You know, it's like I always felt like a real connection there. And I didn't understand what Young Living was, even at that point when I was working for him. Because by then I'm Googling. I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's oils. And then you start having groups come up. You start having men's camp. And it like opens the door to this community that's Young Living. Like it's really like this massive community. And it's been amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's – I love Skyrider. Just so many awesome memories up there. So – Skyrider to both of us is very special in different ways, and I'd love to get your view on that and why it's so special to you, why the land is so special to you.
Yeah, man, it is special to me too. It's very dear to my heart for a lot of reasons. It's a large, intact ecosystem.
Yeah.
It's like Skyrider's part of this big puzzle, and it's a unique part of Utah where you've got big unadulterated tracts of land, mm-hmm. right? And I just feel so at home in that. And then you have the town of Tabiona. It's 200 people.
Yeah.
You know, the graduating classes are like 10 kids. And they know each other. Like my son plays T-ball in town.
Yeah.
And his team is like, that's the graduating class of 2000, whatever.
30.
You know, 30. Yeah. Yeah, right? And they know each other. And that's like special to me. It's like I wanted to experience that for myself.
Where and everybody just knows everybody. And,
yes.
Yeah.
Like my house gets broken into a lot, you know, from now until September, and there's always like fresh bread. There's vegetables.
Oh, it's a good
from a
broken
garden.
In. Yeah, I was like, wait, yeah, people are breaking into your house.
They do. Oh, it's like concerned. Amazing.
Okay, so it's
that's
a good,
the break-ins.
It's
right?
A friendly break-in.
Yes.
Okay,
yeah. I like to. It's like a joke.
Okay, gotcha.
It's not uncommon to like come home and you know you got a bunch of dogs running around. You live in the middle of the country. You can't leave it on the porch. They're gonna like tear it up.
Yeah.
So you'll come home and there'll be like a bag of zucchini and some
that's
bread.
Awesome.
You know. So that's beautiful to me.
Mm-hmm.
And my kids can run around and you play in the water and they're shoeless and it just feels special. Like it's a special moment in time that there's not a lot of that anymore. You know, you've got these large urban sprawls and which is where I grew up. I grew up in Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
Right? And so I know how special that is. And so I guard it dearly to my heart, that type of life.
Yeah, there's not a lot of places where you can just go and you can just leave your kids and know that they're okay and safe.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I think that's really special. And I'm glad that you're able to experience that for your kids, you know, specifically. So
me too.
That's great.
Yeah, so there's a lot wrapped up in there with me. You know, waking up. And just seeing nature,
yeah,
you know, it's good for the soul,
wonderful,
good for my soul.
Well, thanks for sharing. With all that being said, we're gonna cut really quickly to a short commercial break. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the commercial break. Skyler shared his stories and his reasons as to why Skyrider is so special to him. And one of the reasons why it's so special to me is because I got to experience and be part of men's camp, which we've had up there a few times now. And with Men's Camp, my father made this bottle of Iron Will, a specialty blend only for Men's Camp. And this oil is meant to help you find the best in you and to be able to achieve your best self. And so if you'd like to have this bottle, there's only 75 of these bottles in the world. Now, 74 when one of you get this special bottle. All you have to do in order to win this bottle, a chance to win it, is comment down below on this YouTube video. If you're not watching on YouTube, come on over, check it out. But all you have to do is comment hashtag Skyrider down below. Hope you win this bottle. And welcome back. Skyler, so Skyrider is just so different than most ranches. When you think ranch, you're like, oh, cattle, cows, you know, that kind of thing. But there's just so much more going on with Skyrider that not a lot of people know about as far as the conservational side of Skyrider, what we're growing up there, what, you know, Skyrider is, what we do. There's a lot that, you know, not, I don't think anybody or everybody really knows what's going on up there. So please share all that we are doing up there.
Yeah, happy to. It is very different in many ways. And how it's different in the way we manage this is we take, like, I want to say a hands-off approach, but it's not really a hands-off approach. You know, yeah. Like we're managing all the challenge that come with agriculture in a natural way.
Yeah.
So that is, it's a long process. It takes a long time and it's expensive. So we don't farm in traditional practices of, you know, pounding fertilizer, synthetic fertilizers into the ground. We use animals for that, right?
We let Mother Nature take its course.
Yes.
That's and I think what you're trying to explain is we let Mother Nature take its course and we're just kind of there on the sidelines. We're the water boy, right? We're the water boy. That's the best way that I can explain it, is we're the water boy, right? When Mother Nature needs a sip of water or whatever, we're right there to hand it, but we just let it play its course.
Right.
And we just watch it from the sidelines and help out when we need to.
Yeah. And to achieve healthy fields by doing that, we utilize these really cool animals called bison, American bison, right?
Love
these
it.
These big, huge animals that look like they're from Star Wars you see up in Yellowstone. They do really cool things. Like they naturally move around. You know, if you have them in a big field, cows will kind of stay in one place. Mm-hmm. And if you want them to graze and move,
you kind of have to hurt them in that direction.
You kind of got to do it, right? Yeah. And that's great because we can utilize that to our advantage and Mother Nature's advantage too. Mm-hmm. But with bison, they kind of do it on their own. And they also have these big hooves and they dig in the ground when they walk, right?
Yeah.
They're doing this. And they're naturally tilling that soil. And they create topsoil like better than any other animal.
Yeah.
They're just really unique at that. So we like to use our bison and we'll rotationally graze them through pastures. Like say we want to grow einkorn.
And which we do up there.
Which we do. Mm-hmm. And it's great. And einkorn's awesome. I love einkorn.
Yeah.
I'm like crazy about all things einkorn. The cereal is my favorite. Like cereals.
The cornflakes. Yeah, they're really good.
So good. So let's say we want to plant einkorn in this field. It's like, well, that's like, okay, maybe we're 4 or 5 years away from that. So we're going to bring the bison in. We're going to bring the buffalo in. We're going to let them do their thing. They're going to stomp out our weeds. Mm-hmm. They're going to add topsoil. They're going to put nutrients back in the earth. Because if you grow a plant, like the plant grows up,
yeah,
that plant's living on the nutrients in that soil.
Yeah.
And you take that plant out, well, you've taken that nutrients too.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to put that back.
Yeah.
And the bison
give and
helps
take
us,
process.
Yes,
yeah.
The bison helps us put that back. So that's a very unique aspect of what we do.
My dad always made sure, and one of the things that he always shared was give more than what you take. And I feel like Skyrider is the perfect example of that, is there's very little that we take, but so much that we give back into it, like
yeah.
The bison with what they're doing with the topsoil and tilling the ground. I think that's just the coolest thing. It's a natural tilling machine. Just awesome.
Yeah, it's
and
great.
Bison powered.
Bison powered.
Not horse powered. Yes. Bison powered.
Yes, bison powered. So we utilize them. They help us, you know, and it's cool. Like yeah. How cool is that, yeah. Right? And we also can utilize in other places cattle,
mm-hmm.
And cattle kind of get this stink eye, right? It's like, you know, cattle might be it's ruining the earth. And in some places, you know, that's not completely wrong, but it's not completely right either. You know, there's ways to do this that are really a beautiful symbiotic relationship between land and animals, where maybe bison don't work because, you know, bison need good fences or we're like along a really busy highway.
Yeah.
But that animal impact is good. And it can be done correctly where we start capturing carbon from the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And you want to control weeds naturally. The best way is like with animals.
Yeah.
So what our main goal is in Skyrider would be regenerative, all natural farming practices.
I love it.
And the best tools we have for that are like animals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we used to have these big herds of bison that would roam around.
Yeah.
And they would do their thing. And those days are gone. Yeah. You know, I think there's four wild herds of bison in the United States, and three of them are actually in the state of Utah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So the bison
wild.
We see in Yellowstone is the one herd, right?
Yeah.
Then
we have the Henry Mountains as a wild bison herd. And we have the Book Cliffs, which is 2.5-3 hours from Skyler. It's a wild herd of bison.
Wow. Like
they're doing their thing.
I thought the only wild bison group that was left was the one up in Yellowstone. So
yeah,
there's
a couple.
News to me. Okay.
There's a couple, but
I'm kind of glad to hear that.
Few.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's awesome. It's awesome that exists in the world.
Yeah.
But it's small areas that can exist.
Yeah.
So if you want to replicate that or try to replicate that, cattle are like a great way to do that, you know, and you intensively graze them. You have a square field and you use electric fence and you keep them in there long enough to do what an animal would have done naturally.
Yeah.
They step in the weeds and they eat it down to just the right height.
Yeah.
And then they get moved.
Because they also have an inner knowing that if they eat any further, it's not going to come back, and then they don't have food either, which is amazing that they're that smart to know that as well. And I mean, they're fat and happy in there.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
they're living on cloud nine.
Cloud nine. We call it the salad bar.
It's the salad bar.
The cattle salad bar. So you want to have these real, it behooves us to have very healthy fields.
I see what you did there with the hooves.
Actually, unintentionally, but I like it. Yeah, it does. And if you drive through Tabiona, which everyone should.
Yeah.
It's like beautiful.
Yeah.
Like the fields around us are beautiful. And part of that is everyone there loves that land. They have a vested interest
in
that.
They have a very big mutual respect amongst all of them to maintain that.
To maintain it. Yeah. And they do that with the use of cattle. So I think where you get in trouble is the huge industrial feed lots. And there's ways to do it good.
Yeah.
There's ways to do it good.
Yeah.
And there's lots of people doing good.
Yeah.
And if you want to like help rural America and you want to help affect climate change, like do these things, buy from a local producer, you know, shake the hand of the guy that's producing your protein.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do that. And there's lots of ways to
Harmon's
do that.
is a great place to go and get a lot of local stuff, at least here in Utah. So I love that Harmon's does that specifically.
It's a local grocery store chain here that seek out those local producers. That helps a lot.
Yeah.
You know, if your animals aren't getting trucked out of state or trucked into the state as a finished product, like you should know, it shouldn't just be a package sitting on a shelf.
Yeah.
You know, and when you buy from a local farmer, you're helping that community. And rural America is like, it's tough to make a go at it.
Yeah.
To be a farmer rancher. It's tough.
It's not like it used to be before where if you just wanted to do it, you could do it. Now you actually kind of have to have a lot of money before even starting it up, just because it's so expensive with irrigation, the rights, you know, all that kind of stuff, property tax too.
The land rush of people coming out west.
Yeah.
You know, it's a small islands of rural anymore.
Yeah.
So if you want to help, like buy locally from a producer of vegetables, buy locally from a producer of beef or pork. And a lot of these people are doing the right things. Like you can go to their operations and you can talk to them and you can
see it firsthand
too. See it firsthand.
And that's the thing. They put so much love and passion into it and, you know, that they're doing it with honesty and integrity and respecting the land and the animals as well is something that I really love. And kind of tying all into that with respecting the land, I think we need to talk a little bit about the wildlife sanctuary and why that exists and why Jackie's Landing exists too.
Yeah. Well, we should talk about the sanctuary because it's a big deal and it's really cool.
Yeah.
So when we say the Degarian Wildlife Sanctuary, Skyrider is 17,000 acres as a whole. Mm-hmm. 11,000 of that is in a conservation easement with the Nature Conservancy, which means it will stay the way it is forever.
Forever. No one can touch it.
Forever.
Nothing can be done to it.
Yes.
It is the way that it is. And we have tons of migrational herds that come through there, right? What's the number for that?
Hundreds.
Yeah.
Hundreds. Just Tabby Mountain Complex, which is behind the lodge, that tract of land, is like 5,000 head of elk, they estimate.
Jeez.
Now, that's on this side of the highway and the river.
Yeah.
And on the other side, it's tens of thousands. I mean, it's immense. It's a game-rich area.
Yeah, and you've got all kinds going through there. You've got, you know, you've got elk, you've got mountain lion, wolves, deer, anything. Yeah, everything.
If it walks or crawls in Utah, it's there. Moose.
Yeah.
So the way it's situated is you have Skyrider here. And you come down lower in the valley and you have the Degarian Sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
Above Skyrider is Summer Range.
Yeah.
Through Skyrider is the mid-range, that transition zone. And then you have the very far reaches of the sanctuary is the real winter range.
Yeah.
So what this does is it encapsulates this huge area. So Skyrider's here with how it fits in.
Yeah.
Above it is a 40 or 50,000 acre state trust land block that is owned by the school districts here in Utah, the school trust land. So it's held in trust by the school board. I'm messing that up. So you've got Skyrider sits here,
yeah.
And it's surrounded by not only is Skyrider important, the surroundings of it are extremely important. So you have school trust land that sits above it that is 45,000 acres, I believe. Neighboring that is a wildlife management area that is owned by the state of Utah. The Division of Wildlife purchased it from private landowners to secure it. Mm-hmm. It's 40,000 acres.
Jeez.
So you have 45, you have 40, and then you have Skyrider 17.
Mm-hmm.
So it protects a massive amount of really critical land.
And in a way, it's its own little like time capsule.
Yes.
Like, nothing really ages or progresses, gets new or gets old. It's just all one.
It's one.
Yeah.
and it's going to stay one. Yeah. You know, the fact that I can come back with my grandkids and drive through that river valley of the sanctuary and it's going to be the same.
Is rare.
It's beautiful, man.
And it's just so rare.
So rare.
Like my parents were telling me that when they moved, you know, into Utah and up in, you know, where we live, that they were the only house in that area. And now we've got 50 houses being built up behind us.
Yeah.
We've got 20 houses down below us. And it's like, it's kind of sad to see. Like, I get it. You know, that's what happens with time and more people coming in, you know, all that kind of stuff. But yes, I love the fact that that just will never be touched and it will just always be the same.
Well, once it's gone, it's gone, man.
Yeah.
Once it's gone, it's gone. So this is not going to be gone.
Yeah.
This is protected now. And it's so special.
Yeah.
It's a special thing. I mean, you drive through there in the winter, you could see 500 elk in our fields.
Yeah.
Like recharging and living and protected
and
doing their thing.
To me, that's like my perfect world up there.
Yeah.
And my dad, he always like, this is global headquarters. He called that his office.
Yeah.
He called that his headquarters. And it's where, you know, he's buried and he has a beautiful overlook spot of the whole ranch and everything. Yeah. And it's Skyrider for me is just always a special place because of all of the many memories that I have. You know, most of them good, some of them bad, getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Like nobody likes to do that, right?
Right.
And changing the water lines at 4 o'clock in the morning, it's freezing. It's freezing cold. And you can have a wetsuit on and you'll still be cold. But there's just so much that I've learned from there, so much that needs to be shared with other people, so much that people can learn themselves from being up there. And every time that, you know, no matter who goes up there, everybody has a different way that they connected to it.
Sure.
And a different story that they share. And it's just, it's great to hear. It really, really is. Skylar, I truly appreciate our friendship. Thank you so much for taking your time, coming on here and just doing all that you do. Really appreciate it.
Well, and I have to echo everything you just said as the friendship. I mean, I appreciate you like a brother. And I feel that way about you and your family. You know, your dad was, he's a special man to me, and I know he is to you and so many other people. And he was very much a rancher and a farmer. You know, he really identified, like you could, I would say if you were to ask him like who you are, I don't think he would say, I'm the president of Young Living.
No, he never did.
Right. I you know, own this big business. He would say, oh, I'm a farmer, you know, or I'm a rancher.
Or the mountain man.
Or the mountain man.
That's always how,
right?
Like, who are you? I'm the mountain man.
The mountain man. He embodied that. And so that's who he was to me. You know, I knew Gary as the guy that was in the tractor. He was in the fields working. I mean, he came up. I don't know. He was at Skyrider so much that people started calling me to track him down, right? So we'd be working and his phone would start buzzing.
Yeah.
And then my phone would start buzzing and he'd look at me and I'd be like, it's, you know, so-and-so.
Here. Yeah. Mm-mm. Don't answer.
Like, okay. And then another would come like, it's Mary. He's like, mm-hmm. And then, you know, so it was, that's who he was. That's where he thrived in. It was his movement. It was his.
It was his
calling.
Childhood.
It was.
It was always great to go up there and just see how happy he really was, and he became a kid again. He really did. It was just a giant kid's playpen for him, and that's what I love seeing about him. So, well, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for tuning in, listening, or watching wherever you are on Spotify, YouTube, wherever you may be. But thank you so much for tuning into this episode. Appreciate all that you do. Appreciate for being part of our big family. Really, really do. Don't forget to oil up. This is Jacob Young, dropping out. Take care.